How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Lakers. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Harrison Fagan. Training camp is here. The Lakers had their first day of training, official day. Like, they've had workouts and faux breakfast clubs for whatever reason they want to name it that. But training camp is here. Before we get to everything that came out from today and everything that's going to come out from the days following, make sure you guys are following us on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and today's Fast Break. And more importantly than that, because we are trying to give away money, make sure you guys are using the promo code LO Lakers. That is LO Lakers on SeatGeek, and we really appreciate the support that you guys have given to them, that they give to us, and that we try to give back to you guys in the form of a $20 rebate. So that's what's going on there. But like I said, training camp starts today. Harrison, on a scale of 1 to Magic Johnson when he first found Twitter, how excited are you?
Well, Anthony Nation, I am very excited that we have actual basketball to talk about again. Did you just take your headphones out when I started talking? That was really rude.
Oh,
just,
no.
Never mind. Not 9. It's down to a 9 now. But so, yeah, I'm excited to have actual basketball back to talk about. I got to write about somebody shooting today, and it was in an open gym, and they were wide open, but there was, like, actual basketball activity taking place today.
All right, so before everybody thinks I'm the rudest person in the history of podcasting, usually I use the old-school iPhone earbuds that you can still kind of hear yourself in, but today I switched over. I brought back my which are the new earbuds that fit like all the way into the ear, and you can't quite hear yourself properly. And I took one earbud out while Harrison was talking, and he's just Mr. Sensitive apparently.
Should we just cut this whole part and start again?
No, we're fine. So, like you said, though, it was really exciting. Shahan Ahmed from NBC LA put out a really good video that had quotes going on in the background. There were basketball activities, people partaking in basketball activities. The entire vibe and just being able to watch these guys out on the court is just really exciting while Harrison yawns. And
It's 11 o'clock while we're taping this. Wow, we're just gonna razz each other when we're not talking, huh? That's gonna be the show tonight. I
mean, you started.
Fair.
But I guess we'll go ahead and jump into the actual training camp activities. And what stood out to me was, after the last couple seasons under a quote unquote defensive coach, watching just awful defense after awful defense, the tone was set today when Luke Walton steps up and says, what was it, 80% of our practice today was defense. And you played basketball. I played basketball. Defensive practices sucked. Defensive practices. I remember the first day I walked into freshman, or I was the first time I was going to be on varsity, and the varsity coach basically locked away the balls, kept the baskets raised to the roof, and he said it was going to be a purely defensive practice. I don't think I considered quitting basketball for life in that moment. But the vibe after a defensive practice today felt hugely positive, as highlighted by Brian Shaw doing push-ups after the whole thing. But what do you think of the tone that is set by saying, all right, we're going to start training camp with 80% of a defensive practice?
Well, it's like I wrote when Luke made the comments today, is that the Lakers, I mean, that was their biggest issue last year. For all the drama off the floor, for all the talk of, you know, Kobe shooting them out of games, or, you know, they just didn't have enough, their offense wasn't cohesive enough, and all of the time that we've spent kind of digging into all of the issues there, their biggest problem was defense last year. They gave up 109.3 points per 100 possessions. Mm-hmm. I mean, That you're at that point, you're essentially turning every single team into the Golden State Warriors. Like, that's really bad. And so that is the thing that they need to be working the most on. And it's the type of thing that I think takes the most time to come together, I would say. Gaining that trust in your teammates, understanding the game plan, knowing what guys are going to help you where, that kind of thing. I think that that's definitely something that they should be getting started on early, because it's going to take that kind of extra work ethic if they want to not be a bottom five defensive team this year. And I'm not convinced they'll get out of the bottom five, but if they want any chance, they needed to get started on that.
I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, there are aspects of defense that require the kind of bonding that you need set, you know, early on in the process, extremely early on in the process. The trust of, if I leave my guy to go help another guy, that somebody is going to have my back when I leave them. Because, again, subconsciously, and this is the point of non-primitive offenses, is to get somebody put in a situation where they have to choose between making the right basketball play and not allowing their guy to score, right? And good defenses train those players to be able to say, all right, I'm going to go ahead and open my guy to the opportunity to score because this is the right basketball play, and I'm going to do so because I know somebody behind me is going to help me out, right? It's the help the helper process that goes on. And then on top of that, when it comes to the reason it's so hard to work on defense is because there isn't the immediate payback or there isn't the immediate, you know, feel good moment of scoring, right? Like at the end of a defensive possession, it isn't like, all right, we're great. It isn't a fast break after all these things. Sometimes it's a hard fought rebound that takes two or three tips to get into effect, and that doesn't necessarily put you into an advantage offensively. It's just getting yourself to buy into the mentality of, we're really happy that the other guys didn't do what they wanted to do offensively.
And getting just as excited about that as scoring, which is like, that's a platitude that everyone throws around, but it's way easier said than done.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and this is where I credit, and again, these are minor steps along the way, and this is a brand new administration that the players are going to buy into because of how bad it was last year. And we've already played 50 Shades of Shade multiple times, but no matter what, anytime there is a coaching change, for the most part, there is an extra sense of, all right, we got this guy. We're gonna help this guy out at the beginning of the process.
And there's also a tendency to compare, like, here's what's different here, because you just saw what the old was. It's still fresh in your mind, and then there's the new guy, and he's doing things differently.
But what I was going to say was with the caveats that I presented of, it is just nice to have a new voice in the locker room. It's also nice, you know, or it's great to see that after a defensive practice, that there was such a positive vibe afterward. It was. I don't know. You watched the Shahan's video after the fact, right? They were pumped. Mozgov made that last free throw to make.
They almost tackled him.
Right. Please don't hurt Mozgov.
Yeah, guys, you got to be careful. That's a big investment right there.
But you watched it, right? That wasn't the vibe of a bunch of guys who were exhausted after a defensive practice. That was a bunch of guys that was like, man, first practice in the books. Let's get ready for the next day. And that's a hugely different vibe than what we've seen the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, especially because I think what might contribute to that as much as anything is it turns out to have a defensive mindset and be a tough team, you don't have to set up barf trash cans all around the court and try and make sure that your players throw up. Because maybe that's not like the most productive way to team build or do conditioning.
We had the back and forth in our text back and forth today, but did you happen to go back and look back at records of last year's training camps?
Like reports about them?
Right. Well, because I hope I didn't catch Mark Medina too far off of, you know, that he wasn't necessarily too thrown off base of what I was saying today. But as I remember training camps last year, every single report or every single, you know, tweet that came about from these Laker practices was, whoop, they were supposed to end 15 minutes ago. Whoop, they were supposed to end a half hour ago. Whoop, they were supposed to end 45 minutes ago. Whoop, we are now an hour after, you know, and it wasn't every single one ran an hour late, but every single practice felt like ran later than it should have. And on, you know, from where we're sitting, it's like, well, that's poor organization on the coaching staff standpoint. And as a player, you're sitting there.
Well,
like,
I think some of that depends on some people would take that as a positive and say they're putting in extra work.
But they put in extra work anyway. Like they after practice, it's not like these guys just go back and then they do nothing, right? Like D'Angelo Russell.
I'm just saying it just depends on how you frame it.
Well, Russell said just yesterday we spoke about this that
yeah,
they did extra work, but it was because they felt like they had to. This year they're doing extra work and it's because they want to, right? And after a practice that ends an hour later, it's not necessarily like that's where that vibe comes. That's where that statement comes from, where it's like, I still had individual work I had to get to, and going an hour long after the team practice doesn't necessarily make me want to get to the individual stuff, but I still feel like I have to because I do want to get better as an individual player, right? Whereas, and we're only one practice in. But if I am one of those players, I'm saying to myself, yeah, I'm ready. I'm more ready to do my individual work this year than I was last year because I set my schedule to having the practice end here and to exert myself to this extent so that when I get to my individual stuff, I have this much energy to be able to do that much more. And
they also did not just throw up. So.
and not throwing up is a nice added bonus.
It's always a fun fact is it's always more fun to do things when you don't have the taste of vomit still in your mouth.
Yeah. I mean from your experience, when I say a terrible pun and you throw up a little bit in your mouth, you don't necessarily want to keep talking.
I'm normally rushing to finish the podcast by that point because it's just I just want to go brush my teeth or something. Like, that was terrible. And so there's probably a similar thing when you're forced to run wind sprints until you barf.
Exactly.
So basically, I think our point is that basically we know what it's like to go through a training camp practice.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine us trying to go through just like 15 minutes of their practices?
I would not make it. I honestly would not. I was back in the gym a little bit today after a while off because of some injuries, and it was not pretty. me trying to get through 5 minutes of a professional basketball practice right now would probably end in a
paralysis
hospital disaster. Yeah, yeah,
you'd be comatose.
Yeah, yeah. If I was still alive, like that's best case scenario.
All right. So that's how I took the remarks and the positive vibes. I'm sorry to everybody that I keep on using the word vibes, but just the entire feeling surrounding the Lakers right now is so different than it was last year, and it's really exciting because while momentum at this point of the year doesn't really mean much long term, it's nice to have it still, right? Like it's like David Duvall, or no, who's the Duvall, the actor Duvall from The Godfather?
Robert Duvall?
Robert Duvall said in an old Western, it was like, you love it when you have it. Nope, I'm not even going to try it. We're going to have to cut this part out.
Yeah, okay. All right. Sure, we'll cut that out. Well, I'll make sure I get right on that after we get off the show. I'll cut this specific part out.
It's like, damn it. It's you need it when you don't have it, and when you don't have it, you need it.
I think the general point is that if any Lakers fans want to get really excited about the current mood around the franchise, don't just like put a damper on yourself just because it's preseason. You deserve it after the last 3 years. Have some fun.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and move on before I continue to make an a-hole of myself. A couple players individually impressed everybody that was involved in today's training camp, starting with Brandon Ingram, and Luke Walton was pretty profuse about his compliments when it comes to Brandon Ingram, especially defensively.
Yeah, he was talking about, because they said that the 80% of their practice today was defense. And Walton said, quote, "The fundamentals on defense that we were teaching, he was phenomenal at. When you watch him closely like coaches do, you'd be really happy with the way he performed today." So, and then there was that report from Kevin Ding this morning that was talking about how Walton wants to make Ingram into this really disruptive, dynamic defensive weapon. And that's kind of his goal for him right now, which is really encouraging that that's kind of the first part that they're, you know, reportedly focused on. Because it would be easy for them to say, you know what, we need to develop your offensive talents first and the defense will come later. But if they're getting him focused on defense first while he's going to be in a lower usage role this year, then that could potentially be helpful for him going forward, I would think.
Right. And, I mean, I guess part of where they're starting with Ingram is because of the way the practice went overall, right? Like it wouldn't make much sense to start talking about Brandon Ingram's offense if the rest of the team is focused on defense, right? Like that would actually be more of a red flag. Like, yeah, I know we were totally working on defense today, but did you see Brandon Ingram making three-pointers?
It was 80% defense. The 20% that wasn't was just Brandon Ingram. We had him play 1-on-19.
Right.
We figured what better way to get him used to the NBA?
1-on-19 chairs.
Yeah.
Because nobody else was actually allowed to guard him, because then that would be a higher percentage of defense than 80%, right?
I'm not a math guy, so I'll leave that up to smarter people than me.
But yeah, no, I guess with the cynicism aside, he has the tools, right? Like that was always a frustrating thing with Jordan Clarkson, is that Jordan is highly athletic. He's pretty long for his position. He just has terrible habits when it comes to defense, and it's nice to see with.
I think he said yesterday, "I sucked on defense last year."
Right, right. When you look at Brandon Ingram, and it's nice that he's starting essentially what 2-3 years earlier than Jordan Clarkson when it comes to really hammering down the habits that you have to in the NBA,
National Basketball Association.
Yeah, in the NBA, in order to be successful in the NBA, he's hammering down these habits that you need 2-3 years earlier than Jordan Clarkson did. That's not even taking into account the last coaching staff, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is great to hear those things. And yeah, when you look at Ingram, he is essentially 7 feet tall, right? Short of a few inches of 7 feet tall.
6'13".
Right. His arms basically stretch across the key plus. You know, there's no reason he shouldn't be a really good defender. And if they're focusing on that first, and I honestly think being a really good defender is probably easier to coach at this stage than being a good offensive player, because being a good offensive player is usually more tailored to what that player's preferences actually are.
Yeah, but I think that's true. And he's also in the type of situation right now where they have so many other guys that they're trying to get more of a role offensively that they can kind of afford to take it a little bit more slowly on that end with him and really have him try and focus on defense. Mm-hmm. And that's also what they just need defense more than they need offense right now.
Right. So we're only one day into this.
Yeah, we're one day into this, and eventually, of course, you want him to become a two-way player. I just think that it's interesting that defense is what they're focusing on first for the team and for Ingram. But it sounded like offensively, if we're going to talk about the 20% of the practice that was offense, was, unless you had more to say on Ingram.
No, yeah, go ahead.
That it was Luke Walton was really impressed with Julius Randle. He used the word, I think, phenomenal multiple times, and he talked about how the way he ran the court was incredible. And so I think he – and then after practice, video came out of Randle hitting, I think three three-pointers in a row. So
basically, 100%
three-point shooter this year, like over under 70% from the field from three this year for Randle.
All right, so here's what I'm going to...
Running the floor phenomenally.
Better than Draymond.
Yeah.
All right, so here's what I'm going to say just as a general statement regarding Julius Randle.
Because here we go again. Anthony trashing Julius Randle.
I would say at least five or six people, probably more. We're going probably upwards of double digits, actually. People telling me, like, sending me Luke Walton quotes about Julius Randle. Various people sending me, you know, all kinds of people talking about how great Luke Randle was. I don't dislike Julius Randle. I actually...
Well, because you hate him, right?
That's actually true. All right, podcast over. This is now called the Locked On Hating Julius Randle podcast. But no, at the end of the day, and this is where I differ from most people who evaluate talent in the sports that they evaluate it. I am not as high on Julius Randle as others, but I would wholeheartedly welcome being wrong, because that means not only is that one extra really good player in the NBA, but that's one extra really good player on the team that I happen to root for. Right? Whereas like Skip Bayless, for some stupid reason, continues on this crazy anti-LeBron thing, right? Where it's like, just admit you were wrong. LeBron's really good at basketball. LeBron's a winner. Just say that, yeah. And the more you admit to being right about LeBron, that means you get to enjoy LeBron playing basketball that much more. So if I wind up being wrong about Julius Randle, and he actually does fit with the starting five, then great. That makes that starting five all the more explosive, because he is a really talented young player.
And also, I'd say, to be fair to you, I don't think you've ever said that you think Julius Randle is bad. I think you've asked what people hope his ultimate ceiling is, and I think that you've said that there's a possibility that Larry Nance Jr.'s skills are a better fit alongside the other guys that the Lakers have projected as starters, both of which I think are fair questions to ask. I still think that the Lakers are absolutely right to give Julius Randle a chance, because it's like we've talked about, everyone had their value kind of suppressed last year. You can't really judge any player on the Lakers off of how they played last year. You have to see what they look like in a more functional organization and team structure. And so I think to not give Randle that same shot of saying, okay, well, you get to at least start out the year as pretty much the starter. I think there's very little he could do. There's very little chance he loses that starting role before the regular season. So I think that very fairly they're giving him a chance to start, but there is a chance that Larry Nance Jr. is a better fit there. There's a chance that Luol Deng ends up being the better fit there as he ages in a couple years, and they want to get Brandon Ingram into the starting lineup. So I think that you've asked fair questions, but you know, I think people are defensive of their team's players. And, you know, we love that. We love that you guys are passionate. Mm-hmm. And I love that you make fun of Anthony all the time. It's wonderful. And when he is wrong, you absolutely should let him know.
All right, so here's where I was completely wrong early in the podcast. And I've spent the entire podcast since then trying to find the actual quote. It's Robert Duvall from Lonesome Dove.
Oh, my God.
It's from Lonesome Dove. And he says, I don't know what I said early in the show, but basically, in general, it's better to have something and not need it than need it and not have that something.
This has been Anthony Looks Up and Reads Old Western Quotes two segments later.
I think it's closer to three, but anywho. but yeah, but regarding Randall, it's not like when I saw those quotes, you know, all kinds of, basically the two stars of practice today were Julius Randall and Brandon Ingram. And I would say in that order, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like as those quotes were coming in and as more people were talking about Julius Randle and what he was doing on the court as it was going on, I wasn't getting those quotes and being like, yeah, but this and yeah, but that. I was actually really excited about it because he does have a skill set that, like, he could be Lamar Odom. I don't think he'll ever be the shooter Lamar Odom was, but I think he'll be more of the physical presence that Lamar Odom wasn't. You know, and that's a fair trade-off. And if he gets compared to Lamar Odom, who is among the most popular Lakers in the history of the franchise, then great. That's really fun to root for. And if he can get rebounds defensively and get out and run really, really quickly, that makes for a really exciting brand of basketball. That's
and
why
yet, you know who else? You know who else? Their coach decided was a better fit coming off of the bench than with the starters was Lamar Odom. And that worked out okay for him. He was pretty good in that role.
Right. But let's say, you know, they do decide to stick with Randall. And this is what I would imagine. This is what I would predict is how this is going to play out. But they decide to stick with Randall as their starting power forward. Those plays where he gets a defensive rebound and just goes out and runs, gets the entire team behind him or in front of him or whatever, and puts the defense on their heels. Randall in the open court is a lot of fun. Now, he needs to work on his decision-making in those situations, but seeing a 6'10", 6'11 guy dribble the way he can and make those right decisions when he does, that's a really fun player to root for. So it's like when those quotes were coming in today, I just got all the more excited because that's an additional angle to the Lakers' ability to score that they might not have with Larry Nance Jr., who does not handle the ball in the open court the way Julius Randle does.
He did push it a little bit more in summer league, but yes, I agree with you.
Right, yeah. I would say if you were to watch those guys do dribbling drills next to each other, I don't think it would be even a comparison, though.
Probably not.
Right, so, yeah, it was... Basically, I didn't see the only, and we're about to get to this in a second, after one more topic on this stuff, but from the actual basketball standpoint, I didn't see a single negative story that I would say, all right, that's something to be a little wary of moving forward. The last bit, though, and this is what we're going to have a little bit of fun with, was how many people were talking about the music that the Lakers were playing.
Yeah, in case you missed it, the Lakers are playing music during their practices now, which is that's a big development for the team. I think, you know, you can't, it's a little known fact about the NBA, but you can't win a championship unless you're playing music during practice.
I mean, the Warriors didn't win the championship last year.
Yeah, did the Cavs, did they play music? I don't know if they, but no, in all seriousness, what kind of music? I was dying laughing. I was waiting for my class to start this morning, and I saw Mitch Kupchak's quote starting to filter in, and he said, "You know, some of the music we have to censor it." And my Mitch impression is not as good as yours, but I like. What are they like? Who's making them censor it?
That's funny.
I wanna, That Who's is making funny. Them say? Like, is Mitch just like he doesn't want to hear? He doesn't want to hear those bad words.
You guys, I come from an era way before your own. My ears are what you guys would call virgin ears. I am
actually. You know what? I think we got to go the opposite direction. I think maybe Brandon Ingram's parents said that he couldn't hear curse words right now.
Oh, that might be true. He is
or
really
they're
young.
Not. Maybe they're not. They don't want to teach Ivica Zubats any bad words because just in case there's like, you know, like a he ends up using them out of context or something. And they're just trying to keep like profanity out of his lexicon for like another year until he 100% masters English.
It's the opposite. We all know this is the opposite. Anytime you have somebody who does not speak the English language, the first words you teach them are the curse words. That's how that usually plays out.
No, that's absolutely not what I do. You're a terrible person.
That's not what you did?
No.
Oh, see, we had, when I was back in high school, we had multiple foreign exchange students on my basketball team. And the first words, I mean, we were in high school, so we were idiots and jackasses, so maybe it changes over time. But we taught them the curse words first. I use curse words more than I use non-curse words. I just happen to clean myself up for the podcast.
And our non-explicit rating appreciates it.
So what kind of music, if they had to censor themselves, what kind of music would you anticipate they'd have to play? Is it just like nonstop Will Smith, Welcome to Miami?
No, but like is it that? That's what I'm wondering. Is it that? Did they go that direction? They're just playing like Kidz Bop or something, or are they just playing like the really lame version, like the clean versions of the song, where they either replace a word or there's just dead air there?
I love it when they replace the word, not necessarily in the music because you're messing with lyrics, but I love watching like late night movies. And they replace the words.
Even in music, it's hilarious because it's like the most nonsensical replacement that makes no sense in the context of the song.
Well, remember a few shows back, we were talking about Smuckers. Mother Smuckers, the reason I came up with that was because that came from a Jackie Brown movie that they kept on adding Smuckers to Samuel L. Jackson instead of the actual word. It's incredible.
Samuel L. Jackson did a lot of product placement in that movie, then I'd imagine, given his track record with that word in his roles.
I went through like five PB&Js watching that movie because he just kept on talking about that great
Smuckers. So it was a slow day for you.
That was pre-third chin, okay?
All right.
All right. So music, I'm going to borrow from my own timeline, but I would love it if they brought back Alanis Morissette's Isn't It Ironic and replaced that ironic with a very obvious lyric that I'm not going to get myself fined for. So use your imaginations, listeners.
No, it's not the same word. I'm giving you amnesty.
No, but other people might not. I don't want
to. Well, it's not up to them. They don't have your Twitter account password.
But all right, so instead of Isn't It Ironic, they'd say Isn't It Byronic, right? Like, couldn't you? All right.
That would be an 100 on 50 Shades of Shade.
No, could you?
No, think about it. They call in Alanis Morissette and have her redo her song just for their practices, when that's probably not really pump up music anyway, is it?
I mean, I don't know. It's kind of upbeat. It's
okay.
Like, hey, yeah, you know, but. Could you imagine? So you're going to actually cover the team. The Lakers won't let me anywhere near that team. But could you imagine if you were walking down the hallway and Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Russell were walking down the hallway to you and be like, but isn't it Byronic? You know, like, you would die. I would die.
I would laugh pretty hard.
Right? And that's how I would, I mean, if I was, I mean, I don't think Luke has the contempt that most Laker fans have for Byron.
No, Luke, by all accounts, he loves Byron. That's his former coach, and we just both got fined, but that's his former coach in Cleveland. Does that cancel? Do those cancel each other out?
No, we gotta top each other when it comes.
We're both gonna hit each other with. Yeah. Oh man,
But no, I would say if Luke had, you know, any contempt towards that guy, or if he really wanted to get, you know, a few extra credit points with the roster, I might play that song. You know, I might play that song and just happen to say, hey, you know what rhymes with ironic? If you had that B there, it might actually work.
I'm just going to choose to imagine they're playing Kidz Bop in these practices.
Kidz Bop is also funny.
Just the censored versions. They're like, there's no, like, they just replace all the curse words or they do whatever. Yeah. That's what I'm going to go with.
Absolutely. All right. So that has to, unless you have anything else to add about the music.
I have no more music.
It's kind of tough to segue into the topic that we are going to talk about right now because it's been so lighthearted to this point. But that's kind of fitting for what the topic might be, right? Because at the end of the day, as much as you might be rooting for the actual team, you are only rooting for how bad those owners might possibly be, right? So, like, my wife is a Saints fan. Right. And the Saints, the guy who owns the Saints also owns the Pelicans. And both franchises have simultaneously taken huge falls off of cliffs, multiple cliffs even. They just keep bouncing off of cliffs, basically. It's really funny to watch, so long as my wife isn't listening right now. And at the end of the day, the teams that you look at who are the most or that are the most successful tend to have really good ownership structure. And when you look at, we've talked for the last, I don't know how long, since the last guy was fired, it's been positive momentum all the way through, right? But then today we get questions from Bill Oram and from Mark Medina about this deadline that looms over this entire franchise. And all this positive momentum could be for naught if this ownership thing isn't taken care of, right? And it is an ownership thing, right? The Jim Buss is a part.
You're talking, of course, of Jim Buss's deadline to get the team back to Western Conference contention by the end of this year.
By the end of this year. And at the end of the day, Jim Buss, part owner. Jeannie Buss, part owner, right? The entire Buss family owns the Lakers. This could all be taken care of if Jeannie steps forward and says, look, it's not about wins and losses. But I haven't really seen, I might have seen one quote along those lines. And then today we're reminded again from Mitch Kupchak himself, who says, it's beyond my control. All I can do is hope that it's a fun team to watch and that might result in a few, in more than a few extra wins. Right. And I couldn't help but been reminded of, geez, that's a really dark turn that this franchise could take.
Yeah, I think Jeannie, every single time that she's been asked about it before now, other than once this offseason, has said that the plan is still to hold him to his own self-imposed deadline. Like that was his thing. He said it, and he said that he'd step down if they weren't back where he said they'd be, which was Western Conference contention. And I think that was previously defined as conference finals, and I think they've jumped it back a little bit to semifinals, as if that makes it more of a realistic possibility.
Right.
But yeah, I think this summer she did say that that's not what she wants to talk about. She wants to, like, see how the year goes and then talk. That's, like, the first walking it back a little bit that I've heard is her saying, you know, she wants to focus on this year and then deal with all that stuff at the end of the year. And so, that could still mean that Jim is going to end up being forced to step down. This could potentially get ugly. Who knows? But it is kind of, it's fitting that there, like you said, that there's no transition to just jump right into this from the fun stuff we were talking about before, because the Lakers roster is by all accounts expected to be pretty fun this year, but this is kind of that dark cloud elephant in the room that's just kind of hanging over everything.
I mean, look, I wrote about this on Silver Screen and Roll today. And when I saw the tweets from Medina and from Orem come across the timeline, it was a Draymond. Like, it was a kick to the nuts, right? Where it's like, man, it is a really exciting time for the Lakers. And then there's this, right? And, like, let's just say Mitch is so interested in keeping his job that he makes some dumb move for DeMarcus where he moves all these kids. I can't find any other word that I'd be other than devastated. That would suck.
Yeah, it would. And I think you have to give him a little bit more credit that.
I'm not saying he would. I'm not saying he would. And it's why, you know, the silver lining to this is that doing that doesn't necessarily help the long-term sustainability and profitability of the Lakers. That doesn't necessarily help very much. So doing so wouldn't necessarily benefit Jim Buss. While I would imagine Jim would like to keep his job as team president or president of basketball, whatever operations, whatever his title might actually be, as much as he might like to keep that, I think he would actually like the Lakers to be profitable more than that, right? So
as part owner, you'd think that would be somewhat important to him, yeah.
Yeah, so I would... That's the one thing that Lakers fans can kind of lean on and say, this isn't the typical situation where you see Jeff Fisher trade multiple draft picks for Jared Goff, right? This isn't a situation where you see, back in the day, it was... I for some reason, the only examples that are coming to mind right now are football examples, but back in the day when it was the Washington team that shall remain unnamed, trading for RG3 and giving up their entire future for that too, right? And in both of those cases, or at least in Washington's case, we've seen that trade didn't do anybody any favors, right? And right now, Jared Goff is still the third string quarterback, and the Rams aren't really doing anything, right? And both those moves were made as a means to keep everybody employed, while not necessarily keeping the team profitable. And what's nice is that we know, because Jim still is part owner, that he is very interested in keeping the team profitable. So I don't necessarily think that the Lakers would make some kind of knee-jerk move to bring in somebody to add, you know, maybe 5 or 6 wins to their roster and make them a little bit more respectable. But today's report wasn't necessarily something that we can just kind of push under the rug and pretend didn't happen.
Yeah, I guess the consolation that I would offer is not only the ownership thing, you would think that he wants to keep the franchise profitable long term, wants to keep the team sustainable, but there's also the fact that they haven't done anything like that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you also have the past to look back on, like this summer, that they could have been, I guess the contract that you can kind of say, all right, they went a little crazy there, was Mozgov. But for the most part, they kind of held off on doing anything insane this summer, I guess. Mm-hmm. And right. They seemed to be more focused on trying to rebuild around this young core rather than all those rumors that they would either trade Russell on draft night or trade the second overall pick for somebody that could contribute now. There was scuttlebutt about that, and they didn't do it. They seemed to commit to this long-term rebuild.
And even as it stands right now, the Lakers still have, what, at least one max slot at the end of this year, right, in terms of free agency?
Yeah, I believe so.
And potentially too, if they position themselves extremely, like they have to do a bunch of work to do it, but they could potentially have two. So the future, the immediate future, is still flexible while also maintaining, and here's the other thing, and we talked last night about, you know, Nick Young appearing on Spectrum Sportsnet and what that might mean for that situation. I could use that same logic and say the amount of time all these kids are spending in front of the camera could lead someone to believe that this is the team highly invested in these kids.
Yeah, I think they've made it clear that they're the future.
Right. And so while that deadline looms large, the one thing that should keep people from standing on ledges and stuff is the Lakers haven't shown anything. They haven't shown their hand is that they're going to make some panic trade because they need five extra wins.
Yeah, I don't think that we've seen any evidence to believe that that's what's going to happen. So I think that you can kind of take heart in that if you're worried about this, and you know, or if you're tired of hearing about it. I guess at least it'll be done in a year, probably.
And Orem is, and Bill is great at his job. I love reading his writing. He's among my favorite beat writers out there. He's probably top two or three. Right. And
you're all top two or three. You're all top two or three to us.
Everybody. You guys are all great. But what I do think, or the issue that I did take from it, was that he kind of painted this picture where they kind of bumbled and stumbled to where they are right now, where I don't think there was any other route to take where they got to where they are right now. Right. And this is semantic. This is highly semantical difference between how I read the article and how he might have intended the article. But I do think that they had a plan to get where they are right now, and it doesn't make any sense, even with this deadline hanging over everybody's head, that they would just move away from what's gotten them to this point right now.
Well, that's what I did think that we should talk about, is what would we have to see out of it? Like, do you want to see a stay of execution for Jim Buss? So, like, figuratively, I don't think they're actually going to exit, but like, stay of firing or unemployment or whatever for Jim Buss after this season, like if the young guys continue to show progress, because I think it would be hard to argue that they haven't drafted well. And so if you're going through a rebuild, then, I mean, I don't know. Do you still want him around? Would you rather have them bring in someone else?
That's tough. And I pardon everybody for all the long pauses. Like, I really, I'm sorry. It's just a lot of thinking that's going on here. But look, when it comes to Jim Buss, It's always been this weird dichotomy where, like, a good move happens and people credit Mitch, and then a bad move happens or a good move goes wrong and people say Jim Buss is a moron, right? And I've never found that particularly fair at all, because at the end of the day, they are working together in this situation.
Yeah.
So if you're going to say that Jim Buss deserves to go, then unfortunately, I would actually argue that probably Mitch deserves to go, right?
Well, they've been, at least publicly, they've done nothing but present the picture that they're making the decisions as a tag team.
Right. And so if they're making all these decisions as a tag team, and let's say, like, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with you that they have drafted well, right? Because we don't know. It's really early in all these guys' careers.
Yeah, that's true. I guess a better way to put it is it looks like they have.
Yeah. All right. So if you're going to put it like that, then I would agree, right? But let's say Russell plateaus this year, or let's say Ingram can't stay on the court this year. If we see multiple guys that, you know, just don't look like they're going to work out, everybody's got to go. Right. I don't think I'm necessary. I don't think this is a hot take. I think this is just how that works out.
Yeah.
If you're gonna say that Jim Buss deserves to go, Mitch deserves to go. You know? And while it would suck to see somebody like Mitch go, because I've worked so hard on his impression. but while it would suck to see somebody like Mitch go, who has been such an anchor for the entire franchise, at the end of the day you have to hold people accountable. And you can't just hold one guy accountable because he happens to be not as good in PR as Mitch is.
Yeah.
That's kind
of... I think that's a fair point to make. I think if it was me, I think I'd rather stay the status quo, because I think that as long as they're showing steps forward, I think that you stick with the status quo. But like you said, if everybody kind of plateaus or takes a step back, then maybe it's time for the proverbial heads to roll.
Absolutely. All right, so we'll move on from that. We'll end on a lighter note because
the shockingly recurrent segment that just it will not go away.
We get
Shades of Shade.
We keep getting requests.
Yeah.
And
so tonight we had frequent listener, I think, at Sean_LAL16,
mm-hmm.
and he alerted Anthony and myself to a little bit more shade that Nick Young, he talked to Mark Medina of the LA Daily News today, and, you know, he threw a little bit of shade. So, Anthony, are you ready to play 50 Shades of Shade once again? Like last night, we thought we were done with this for like another couple months. We're like, we may get it like another stray quote here and there, but I think we're probably done with this for now. But then the very next night, it's back.
Not only that, but this might shock everybody, but I haven't actually read the quote.
Yeah, well, I told you not to. So, Sean, thank you for throwing this our way. And Anthony, here we go. Yeah, that's a good idea. Just drink right while I'm about to read it. The style of play fits my style. I can still be me here a little bit, and nobody here is harping on my personality no more. That'll be all right.
All right, so I'm taking this a couple ways, and part of this is because the last coach and Kobe, to me, are very connected. The way I've read all of the interactions from the start of getting ready for this season is that I see the last guy and Kobe as kind of extensions of each other. And I could see Kobe getting really annoyed with Nick Young's act.
They did trash talk each other a lot, but for what it's worth, I mean, Nick Young made it sound like he enjoyed it.
Right. But, I mean, like, look, the reason Kobe reportedly did not like Dwight very much, and the reason Dwight isn't as respected as you would expect somebody who has his amount of talent in the NBA to be respected is wasted talent, right? Like Kobe, the thing that I think drives Kobe the most insane is wasted talent. And while you could say all kinds of things about Nick Young, he's a joker, he's not serious enough, the whole Swaggy P thing is a distraction from what he should actually or might actually should be focused on. All that stuff. What you cannot say about him is that he is not talented. He was a lottery pick. He's 6'6 plus. He can shoot from 3-point range. He has decent handle.
Theoretically, or at least used to be able to.
He has the athleticism that one would hope for if they were going to be 6'6 and be successful in the NBA. Like, he has the tools that you would want to see from somebody of that stature and playing that position. He just hasn't made it work because he is kind of a joker. And that's I could use a different J word there.
I'd argue the difference between him and Dwight is that I think as far as Kobe, I think he at least respects the guys that are willing to go at him. And by all accounts, Nick Young was crazy enough to think that he was one of those guys. And so I think Kobe in some ways probably to say he thought it was a little bit cute is a little demeaning, but I think you get the sense that he enjoyed it. He enjoyed that back and forth.
No, I would imagine Kobe at the stage of his career that he played in practice against Nick Young found Nick Young pretty difficult to guard.
Well, he found everyone difficult to guard.
Right. But even when Kobe was in his prime, I don't think I would imagine Nick Young was among the top 15 toughest guys to guard at the shooting guard spot, not in the league, but as a shooting guard.
Do we need to play the hot take sound effect? I don't know, man. That
for Kobe, I don't think Nick Young was very easy to guard. Like those Wizard years, that was back when they had Gilbert Arenas and Nick Young and was it Deshaun Stevenson? They used to give LeBron troubles back then. Nick Young, like, he wasn't a joke.
Was Nick Young on that team?
Yeah,
I don't think Nick Young was on that team.
He was either on that team or shortly after. Because he was like a rookie back then. No, he had just come from the Clippers. All right, people fact check us.
No, Nick Young was drafted by the Wizards, dude.
Yeah, so he was like a rookie then. So he was with them for a little bit. When they had, like, I think they had, was Caron Butler on that team? I don't think Caron Butler was on the team yet. Or then. But
I think you're a little off here, but that's okay. Keep.
But yeah. He is a really talented player, as evidenced by what we saw when he had Mike D'Antoni as his coach.
Yes, that's the example I would point to more than Washington Nick Young. Yeah.
Right. So, but and it's why I would say Shaq and Kobe feuded as much as they did, because I don't know if there is anybody in the history of the NBA who was more physically gifted than Shaq.
Yeah.
And yet he kept going on and on and on about, I got hurt on injury time, I'm going to heal on injury time. That kind of stuff rubbed Kobe the wrong way. And when he saw...
So Nick Young joined the Wizards in 2007-2008, in which they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals first round.
To whom?
And then after that, they didn't make the playoffs again until 2013.
Who'd they lose to in that first round?
That it doesn't show that here.
No, oh, you're killing me. But that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, long story short, is that he was a really talented guy who I don't think it would be a stretch to say wasted said talent. And there is nothing that I don't that rubs Kobe worse than wasted talent. And by extension there, if Kobe was talking to the last coach after practices and after games, I can't imagine the last coach was particularly thrilled with the antics that Young was pulling while not being productive.
I don't think that his less than thrilled with that had anything to do with Kobe.
I would say that. We're gonna have to agree to disagree.
Yeah,
here,
we got way off track here.
Those guys are extensions of each other while they were in LA.
50 Shades of Shade, where would you, how much shade would you give this?
50.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. So we've had two 50s in a row. I think that might be the end of this game, but who knows the way this training camp is going. D'Angelo certainly getting teed up with plenty of opportunities to, you know, throw some more. So we'll see how that continues as training camp keeps rolling.
That has been fun to watch the beat reporters kind of get after a little bit, because when they kind of like, hey, so what's this like compared to
what,
like,
was it like
year?
Not being screamed at as we were walking in here.
Absolutely. All right, so this show went a little bit longer than expected.
Yeah, we updated you on Nick Young's playoff resume, so I think that was really important.
A lot longer than expected, actually, now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and get out of here. This was the first show from training camp. I don't think all the shows are going to be this long moving forward. But
no, I wouldn't imagine so.
Sometimes we'll have a little bit extra talk, a little bit extra.
You
got to
forgive
us.
Training camp just started again today. We had actual basketball stuff to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, honestly, it's just we got a little carried away with ourselves because we got excited about having basketball. And yep. Honestly, if you're going to blame us for stuff, blame us for other stuff. Like my terrible jokes, for example. Blame us for that stuff. All right. So I would hope that everybody is using the promo code LOLAKERS on SeatGeek for the $20 rebate. We actually got added today by somebody who said that they used the promo code. They got their rebate. They thanked us for that. Send us that stuff. That was actually a really cool way to... I wouldn't say start the day because it was semi late in the day, but it was a really cool, you know.
We like to hear about that stuff. Yeah. I think that's your point. We want to hear that we're saving you guys money.
Tell us how you're using those $20. That's fun.
Let us know. Well, like, we care about this stuff.
Exactly. No, we actually really do.
No, yeah, I wasn't being sarcastic. No, we definitely do. Like, I think that that's cool that we actually have the opportunity to bring you guys some rebates now. Because if you're listening to us talk about the Lakers, you're clearly you're one of the bigger sports fans in the world. So you got to be dedicated. So we appreciate it, and we do like to interact with our listeners about this kind of stuff.
And honestly, if you're listening to me ramble on and on and on and on and on, you deserve a reward.
Yeah, especially about Nick Young being one of the 15 hardest players to guard at shooting guard.
At shooting guard in, yeah, all right. Go ahead and quote me on that stuff. I'll tweet that right now. Do you want that to be my fine?
No, you said that yourself.
Fair point. All right, so catch this show and any of our other shows on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. Again, the promo code LO Lakers, and we will talk to everybody again tomorrow. We have a special show coming up for you the
Friday.
That it looks like, and we're actually going to record that one, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, we got a good guest. We're not gonna tell you guys about it this time, just in case, you know, it doesn't record. but we have a good guest coming for you Friday.
Absolutely. So we will talk to everybody again tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening to this, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Anthony.
Shouts to Kareem Rush. I'm standing by my freaking guns when it comes to Nick Young.
You're insane.